Welcome to another episode of Thoughts of a Techno Wizard, Techno Shaman, Anarcho Futurist, and other stuff too. It is Sunday, February 18th, 2:06 p.m., 2024. And boy, oh boy, I'm just gonna talk. Just gonna talk a little bit today. Gas myself up a little bit, as well as review. Just kind of look back at the past couple years of podcasting, if you want to call it that. Audio journaling is what I really like to call it. As well as look towards the future. You know? It's so funny. So, just like a few minutes ago, really, I was looking back at some of my old podcasts. And Just wow, amazing. I haven't listened to like a full-on episode, but I was just clicking through and hearing a few minutes of a few episodes from almost every year since I've been doing this. And the earliest I found was on my old YouTube channel from 2017 when I was podcasting through Spreaker, and they had an ability to upload it both to Spreaker and to YouTube. So that's how, and I'm glad I did that, because unfortunately Spreaker went out of business, or I don't know what happened to it. I think it's still there, because I just looked it up. It's still there, but all my episodes, I couldn't find any of my my podcasts on there, so they probably just deleted a whole bunch of people's stuff, if you weren't like a top creator or whatever, I don't know. But fortunately, the rest of it does live on YouTube, so that's there. But I do want to figure out a way to archive my own stuff more intentionally online, and something that I can do on my side, because believe it or not, I just opened up this app, which used to be Anchor, but is now Spotify for podcasts or something, Spotify for podcasters, and lo and behold, they're gonna sunset this one too, so I won't be able to podcast on this specific app after June of this year. They're supposedly rolling out a whole new tool where you can do better and cooler things and all this other bullshit. But that's just the grind. But that's not what I want to talk about, at least not yet. I just want to reflect a little bit on some things I've noticed, which is pretty interesting. One is that my speech impediment. I've always known I had a speech impediment because I had to take speech classes way back in kindergarten, actually. that's the only time I actually took actual speech classes. But even listening back to myself in 2017, I still can hear, you know, my speech impediment, which is hilarious. Also because in my head, I don't feel like I have a speech impediment. I never really felt like I had one. I just knew, like, logically that I had one. Simply because when I heard myself, you know, I just don't sound, you know, nearly as clear as I'd hope, and as I hear myself. And I know I've gotten a lot better with that, so you may or may not be able to tell in these episodes. But I have to, like, consciously enunciate, if that's the right word. Like, I have to move my lips a certain way in order to make sure I'm fully, you know, enunciating certain things. And it's weird because I'm not sure what it is. It's not quite a lisp, but it's also not quite the R's thing. I do have trouble with my R's, but I don't think it's, at least it's nowhere near the same as like my brother or other folks that I've heard, like Isaac Arthur, you know. It's not as bad as theirs, in terms of having trouble with your R's. I should probably look into that one day, but it doesn't really matter that much to me. I just found it interesting that I was able to, like, hear that. Kind of jumped out at me while I was listening to myself. Some other things I notice is how I've always been trying to be consistent. That's like a word I use way too much. And I wanted to use that again today. I was like, oh yeah, I want to be more consistent, you know, posting more regularly. But I need to stop saying that, because I am consistent. Like, I'm inconsistently consistent. You know, I've been doing this since freaking 2017. You know, I'm not gonna stop. I'll figure out a way to do another one. And you know, some part of me is frustrated with myself on the fact that I'm still like this, like raw, and like, you know, I don't bother editing, and nobody listens to this, or obviously not nobody. You know, I have my handful of quote unquote true fans, which I really appreciate, y'all. But you know, it's not like a popular podcast or anything like that, and I doubt it will ever be. And I know that I've always been frustrated myself for not doing more to get this out there, and to get it to a state where, you know, I have hundreds and thousands and maybe even millions of people listening, right? But at the same time, I'm also proud of myself for keeping it real, right? For keeping it down to earth, and for not really caring about that, because I do think 100% that if I had made this something that will be more appealing to a wider audience, it wouldn't be the same, you know. And I do think there is a space for that, of course, and I'm I'm definitely planning on doing more things in that end very soon. But this specific podcast, I really have accepted and really embraced the idea of it being a walk and talk audio journal. Right? Right? A way for me to simply document my thoughts as I have them. Sometimes every day, these days, almost every consistently, every month, maybe, you know, every other week or something like that. But nonetheless, it's me year after year just documenting my thoughts and ideas. And so I do appreciate that about myself, so I have to give myself props for that. I haven't really heard anybody else do something like this. I'm sure there's probably people out there for it. Like, if they're anything like me, then nobody's listening to them too. You know, they only have a handful of listeners, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, right? Maybe that is why this can exist, because if it is something that tons and tons of people are listening to, I'm probably gonna be much more, you know, reserved, right? It's going to be much harder for me to be this raw, right? To let myself be this imperfect. You know, I've always been a perfectionist growing up, and it's funny because it probably doesn't seem like that in this podcast, just because of the way that it's unedited, unfiltered, raw. You know, inconsistently consistent. And yet, that is a core part of me, right? I've always struggled with, like, wanting to not being able to do things and not being able to put things out because I wanted it to be perfect, right? I wanted it to be a certain way, have high standards for myself and for the world. And so because of that, it's always difficult for me, you know, to put things out there. But doing this has allowed me to get over it, but it has allowed me to, you know, put it aside in circumstances where I feel like it's more important to just get it out there, to just do something, to just say something, to just practice thinking and doing and talking and whatnot. So yeah, I give myself props for that. And I think it's an important thing to do. And I really do hope that more people do something like this, because I do think it's extremely helpful with, you know, just reflecting, being able to reflect on yourself, but also do so in a public way, right? Because we hear all the time about journals, about writing journals, and that's great. If you can do that, awesome. Unfortunately, I can't. Like, I've tried many times to just sit down and journal. And the closest I was able to do that was something similar to this, where I wrote articles, right? And I published them every single day for like a year, or over a year, probably. I think it was several years. But yeah, that was the closest I was able to get to, you know, doing a quote-unquote journal. So there's something about, you know, putting things out in the world that allows me to express myself in a way, or not just express myself, but reflect on myself, right? Because if I know it, I have to put it out in the world. Even if I know that nobody's listening, or maybe 1, 2, 3 people are listening, you know, whatever. To me, it feels like I have to deal with certain things that I would not otherwise do, you know, if I was just writing to myself, right? And what I mean by that is, like, I recognize that somebody may listen to this and they may not be thinking at all of how I'm thinking about things. So I have to, by necessity, explain myself a little bit more, right? And there, because of that, I have to, you know, pull the thread more. I can do a little callback from the last episode, right? I have to pull the thread a little bit more than I would if I was just writing things down to myself, right? Because I'm publishing this out, that means I have to have a higher standard for the thoughts that I have, right? I can't just leave a thought as like, oh yeah, this is a cool thing or whatever. I have to really, you know, tackle it in a way that may at least be somewhat followable, recognizable, you know, consumable by somebody else. So yeah, it's an interesting way of doing journaling, but I do think it's very helpful for me. And I know, of course, you can, you know, get this to this level of kind of self-reflection, just writing to yourself. There's different techniques you can do and all that other stuff, of course, obviously. But that's just not, you know, a good thing for me personally. It just doesn't work as well. It's hard for me to be, quote unquote, consistent, right? When it comes to writing. And a big reason for that also is because I spend way too much time on the computer already, and way too much time writing already. And I've said this many times, but I don't like super enjoy writing. It's just a very useful way of putting my thoughts out in the world in a written format. So, you know, I do it. But I enjoy this. Like, I like talking, but I don't get to talk about any of this, you know, in my everyday life. So this also, it serves multiple, you know, purposes. And that I think that's another reason why this is so powerful for me, because, you know, I can walk outside, not look at a screen, just enjoy being outside, but also share thoughts, right? Share ideas and practice my speech and practice my ability to present ideas and, you know, practice my ability to be vulnerable and be raw, and at the same time put something out there in the world that might resonate with somebody else, that might help somebody else get through what they're getting through, and to see that they're not alone. And all, it's just so many things, you know, so many things that come of this that would not happen, that would not be possible through a, you know, physical journal. So yeah, it's just interesting that I've been doing this for so long, and I just wanted to reflect on that a little bit. Some other things I recognize that I saw as well is the ideas that I talked about. Like, I have been, you know, as much as I feel like I am also inconsistent in my ability to do things, as in to stick with one idea and to create it, right? Put it out there in the world, like to create something like an app or a business or something like that. Like, that's not my strong suit, unfortunately. And that has been extremely difficult for me to come to grips with, right? If you look at my other podcasts, there's probably been several times when I was like, oh, this is it. This is the idea I want to move forward with. You know, I could think back right now to the BTMP thing, where I wanted to create a sort of tool for self-actualization for folks, starting from something very basic and going up from there. It was such a great idea. I was obsessed about it for months. Then I just didn't go anywhere with it, right? Didn't go beyond that. And that's just one example. There's been at least a dozen, probably more, right? And at some, in some way, I do feel bad about that. I feel terrible. I feel like a piece of shit. Like, I should do more. Like, I should be able to execute, right? Ideas are useless if you don't execute on them. And I fully agree with that, or somewhat. Not, maybe not fully, but I do agree with that in many, many aspects. And it's something that I'm constantly struggling with myself and trying to see how I can remedy that, right? Because I do think it's important to put actions to words, or put words to actions, and, you know, and execute on something. However, what I also saw is that this has allowed me to really refine ideas, right? To really consider different types of ideas. I find that I have both been very consistent with the type of kind of thoughts I have. Like, for instance, when I was one of the podcasts I saw was from 2017, and it was talking about the power of distribution and decentralization, right? Essentially an anarchist ideal before I was ever really into anarchism, right? And so to me, that shows that, and again, I almost never go back and look at my own work, right? So it's not like I'm, you know, trying to get the same idea across by, you know, repeating the same message. No, it's like I'm literally just learning stuff about the world, sharing what I learn, and I come to some conclusions, and it's like, it's almost like different people coming to different, coming to the same conclusion, right? Like, even though I'm the same person, I have experienced very different, like, different things throughout time, and I've changed my mind about many things, and yet I happen to come across similar conclusions multiple times, even when I'm in very different headspaces, and again, was not looking at my work at all, right? So to me, that feels like I'm constantly coming back to something that's very important, that's very, you know, powerful, that I should, you know, I should call out, right? Like, there's something powerful there. And so I found that, yeah, very interesting that, you know, this kind of anarchistic idea, these kind of anarchistic ideas are something that I have been coming back to, right? These are consistent problems in the world that I, and or consistent solutions, and, you know, that I have talked about. And what was I saying? Oh yeah, so what I find good about the fact that I may not be able to execute very well is that the fact that I can ideate very, very well, right? Like, I can come up with new ideas very, very consistently, and I regularly, you know, kind of filter through those ideas and work through them, right? I don't just take things at face value. I'm constantly, you know, pulling the thread. And I do think that is powerful. And my career, right, my real life career, my day job has shown the power of that, right? Like, the entire reason I even got this job is because that's basically what I do. Like, I come up with ideas and I document them, right? When somebody has an idea for what something they want to build, I analyze that. I say, okay, that's, you know, does that actually solve the problem that you're looking for? You know, how can we fix it, or how can we build on that? You know, I have all these other things where I ask other people the same things I ask myself, and that allows me to do a great job as a designer. And for a long, long time, which you probably might hear in my podcast if I, you know, was being as real as I think I am, I've been extremely frustrated with this concept of being just an ideas person, right? I've always been worried of, well, I always wanted to be an ideas person. Like, since I wanted to invent hover cars, I knew I am an ideas person, right? Like, I have ideas, and I build on them, and I analyze them, and I dissect them, and I deconstruct them, and I construct them again. And I, you know, toss them aside and find new ones and come back to them. Like, all this, like, I love ideas, right? That's always been a core part of myself. But I've always been frustrated because, you hear this idea, like I said earlier, that ideas are useless without execution. And again, I agree with that to some extent, in that ideas in and of themselves are not, you know, the thing that makes the world go round. However, something I have, I'm pretty sure I mentioned recently, is that ideas are extremely important nonetheless, right? Because ideas are the foundation of things that are executed upon, right? You can't execute upon something that you don't have an idea about. And the quality of the idea matters, right? If you execute upon a poor idea, even if you execute really well, you still won't really come up with something that's great, right? You can execute, it's like solving the wrong problem, right? It doesn't matter how well you solve the wrong problem. If it's the wrong problem, it doesn't matter. If anything, you might be making it worse. And so I do think there's a great importance in being able to flesh out ideas, being able to come up with them and run through them and all this other stuff. And of course, I don't want to, you know, make it seem as if I'm the only person that can come up with great ideas. I think that's another thing that makes it hard to be an ideas person, right? Is that some people, and even yourself, like myself, like have this assumption that means, oh, the ideas person is the only one that can come up with ideas. But that's not true, right? In reality, everybody plays a part, right? Everybody comes up with ideas, and everybody has a role, and everybody can add to the pile of ideas and refine them and so on and so forth. And again, you know, this is something I see in my job, right? I can spend weeks coming up with a storyboard and fleshing out all these ideas and looking at what's good and what's bad and seeing, making sure I account for everything. And then other people look at it and like, oh, what about this? I'm like, damn it, how did I not think about that, right? Like, I could be hard on myself and feel like I am a failure because I didn't think of what seems to be an obvious thing. But it's, that's the thing about ideas, is they're endless, right? There's limitless amount of ideas out there. That's why it's so exhilarating to me, because there's always going to be more stuff you can come up with. However, there's also a lot of collaboration that happens, right, with these ideas. And not one person can never, you know, have all the ideas, and one person can never make the perfect idea or anything like that. Like, it's not a singular individual job, right? Even though it's my job, for instance, in my day job, to come up with ideas, to design, a big part of that process is incorporating other people's ideas, is asking people what they think, is asking people to review, is asking people for feasibility and limitations and all these other things, right? And so that's what I've learned a lot, you know, over the last couple of years, is that ideas are extremely important, but they are one part of a team, right? One part of the soup of solving problems, if you will, right? I think that's a terrible metaphor, but, well, maybe it's not. I'll just stick with that. They're one part of the soup of, you know, solving problems. And there's a lot of ingredients that go in that soup, right? And too often, I think our society does go too far into one space of, like, ignoring the importance of idea people and just only really recognizing people who come up with, you know, who not just come up with a seemingly clever idea, but who execute that idea regardless of how clever it actually is, right? Our society rewards people who execute regardless of the quality of the actual idea. In fact, oftentimes you see this interesting thing where if you execute well enough, people retroactively say that was a good idea. Right? Even when it's not. And you see this all the time in technology, right? That just because a technology has $1 billion behind it, that means that it's a good technology. When in actuality, the technology is not actually making anybody's lives better, right? It's not solving major problems. If anything, is creating more problems. But people just assume, oh yeah, any good problem will create more problems. I'm like, wait. No, like any good problem, any good solution will create less problems than it was before, right? I think people have, in our current society especially, have this lower bar, have lowered the bar for what a good idea is, right? Or rather, they've moved the bar such that, you know, or redefined the bar, right? Instead of a good idea being something that, you know, actually solves the problem, that, you know, helps a lot of people and all this other stuff, it becomes something that a lot of people use or a lot of money is spent on, regardless of how, you know, it's actually leaving the world, regardless of its positive impact or negative impact on the world. And a great example of that is, of course, you know, social media, a lot of social media. Even let's take something like Uber, for example, right? Uber is such an interesting case because, like, I remember when it came out, and I was, you know, one of these folks. I was like, oh yeah, I remember their mission statement. I went to one of their early hackathons or whatever it was called, or kind of like a meetup type of thing, startup type of meetup thing. And they were like, our mission is to make transportation run like water or something like that, flow like water or something like that. And I was like, oh wow, that's beautiful. That's amazing. I love that. But year after year, you start to see, and even this is even when I was using Uber every day because I didn't have a car, right? Even during that time, I started to see, and other people started to see, how Uber was making the world a worse place, right? At first, it was like the Uber for everything. Like, everything was trying to be an Uber app, like, where you just deliver the thing. But at the same time, it was also the realization that, oh, it's destroying the cause for mass transit, right? It's making traffic worse. It's making people's lives worse, the people who are making those deliveries. Yes, there are some people who are making money from it, but the vast majority of Uber drivers, you know, came out at a loss, right? I knew people who did Uber drive, like my father, for example, but also just if you just look at the data, right? Like, it says it all the time, where the vast majority of people who drove for Uber either lost money or, you know, didn't really gain anything, because all the you know, money they made ended up going back to spending on you know, maintenance or gas or this, that, and the other, insurance and all this other stuff, right? So you have to ask, like, what did Uber do? Like, did it actually make the world a better place, right? Did it make transit flow like water? Unfortunately not. it just moved it around, right? It just took the flowing river, put a dam there, and rerouted it through another path. So in some ways it made it worse, and a few ways it made it better, right? Where it rerouted the path, like the few people who weren't able to drive or didn't have access, they now have transit. But it still didn't actually solve the problem of transit, right? Well, what would have solved the problem is investing in more mass transit and having more walkable cities and all this other stuff, right? I'm not saying Uber is bad, like, in and of itself as a whole idea. It's a great idea, and it should be something that exists. But the fact that it had to destroy, you know, mass transit and a lot of walkability in a lot of places made it worse, made the world a worse place in many ways. And so if you look at the calculus of it, like if you had to do a calculus or something, I'd wager that the benefits did not outweigh the cons. And so to me, that's the bad idea, right? Both in conception and in execution. But the execution, because it had so many dollars and so many people using it, people just say, oh yeah, it was a good idea, right? ignoring the fact that, you know, had all these other terrible externalities. And I think that's something that we need to, as a society, come to grips with more, right? Is just because an idea is popular or is the norm or has a lot of investment does not mean that's a good idea. And we need to do a much, much better job at recognizing these things, at being able to communicate and analyze, you know, all of these different ideas that we're coming up with. And this is especially important with technology, with AI, right? Don't want to get into that whole thing. Many of the problems that I've talked about in many of my past AI episodes are coming to fruition, right? Like the fact that it's making, you know, making it harder for people to recognize what the truth is and how it's devaluing the very nature of, you know, things like video production or writing or this, that, and the other, right? And even though it can, it could, again, there are, when something is a bad idea, I think, let me take a step back. When something is a bad idea, it's not that the entire idea is, you know, completely useless. It's that there are portions of it that are not as refined as it should be, right? There are portions of it that may cause more harm upon execution, right? And so when you have a bad idea, it's not just, you shouldn't throw the idea away. You should refine it some more, right? You should think about it some more. You should review it some more. You should get some more feedback on it before you execute on it. Because after you begin executing on an idea, especially a bad idea, those problems just compound, right? You get tech debt, if you want to speak in the you know, technical startup world or the kind of tech world. I see this again. This is why I'm so thankful for my career right now, because it allows me to have a level of material, materiality, if I can make up a word, right? I can have some material examples of how of my theories here. Like before, I had these ideas and these theories, but I didn't really have a huge amount of real world examples. But now I do. Like, I can point to my job and many other jobs, right, in this space as well, to show the real, you know, material impact of these things. But anyways, all that to say is that, like, for example, when I'm creating a storyboard and I think, you know, oh, we should do this way, right? Have this idea for how something should be executed upon. My job is to review that. It's to really think about that. It's try to write it out, you know, as much as I can. Get an outline. Talk to subject matter experts to see what they think about it. You know, see where their goals are. See what problems they have, and see, okay, will this idea solve those problems? Right? They say they want to help people be safer, help people be more engaged with the content. Right, this, that, and the other. Then I have to really think about, okay, how exactly will this idea solve those problems, right? And what are the pros and cons of this? Like, if we go this route, you know, will it actually teach them those lessons that we want them to use in the real world, right? And sometimes there's a no. Like, there's a good idea that I might have. Like, oh, it'd be cool if we use, you know, we have this ability, for instance. I'm just making something up right now because I can't, you know, talk details for real. But let's say, for instance, I want to teach people how to, you know, cut trees, right, in real life safely, right? Because the real life problem, they may be, you know, that, you know, people cut trees wrong and then the tree falls on them, right? And so we want them to actually stand a certain way, cut it a certain way, you know, use a certain type of axe, this, that, and the other, right? There's certain principles that you have to go through. And so I have to gather this information, first of all, in order to even recognize what the problem is, the full scope of the problem. And this is actually a great point here, because this is an area where a lot of technology fails, right? A lot of people are like, oh, yeah, we have this problem. You know, the people are cutting trees down, or and it's falling on them. Let's make this app. And then boom, they just run with it, right? Like maybe they do a quick jam session, you know, they, you know, or whatever. But because they can, because they have the ability to just execute an idea very quickly, they start executing on the idea before they even recognize the full scope of the problem. They may think, oh, the problem is, you know, the tree's falling people. So let's make this device that picks up the tree before it falls on you. But it could be something else, right? It could be that they're using the wrong axe. It could be that, you know, or it could be even more problems associated, like the sawdust is getting in their lungs, and that actually causes a longer term problem than just the tree falling on them, right? It could be, you know, oh, the trees that they're cutting are, you know, diseased, right? So it's better to find trees that are not diseased or whatever. Like there's so many, you know, portions of the problem, of the full scope of the problem, that if you just run and just execute on it as quickly as possible, you ignore all of that. And there's this idea, especially in tech and technology, that you should, you know, build first and, you know, fix things later, right? Like if you build fast enough, then, you know, move fast, break things, then you'll be able to fix most of the problems anyways, right? Like if you execute on it, you'll eventually find the real root of the problem. But that's not really the case. Because the more you execute on something, the more you're trying to iterate on your execution, right? You're not actually iterating on the problem, right? You're not actually going back to reconsidering the entire problem from scratch. Because the more you execute, the more you dig yourself into a hole of like, oh, we've spent so much time and money on this specific path, this avenue. Even when you try to pivot, you're almost certainly going to be pivoting around, you know, the things that you've built in that case, right? Like for instance, if you, again, with this example of the tree, they might come up with a drone that grabs the tree before it falls, right? And so, you know, they're like, oh yeah, we create this thing. Oh, but now the drone, you know, it may not be able to catch it enough. So you could try to create a drone that's faster, or create a drone that's stronger, right? That can catch it more quickly. All the while, you know, and you might even try to pivot and say, okay, maybe that wasn't the great case. Maybe this isn't profitable. And, you know, it's very difficult to create enough drones to catch enough trees to save enough people. So instead, we're going to, you know, have robots cut into trees. So even if it falls, it doesn't really matter. You know, we'll pivot. Now we're a robot company that cuts the trees instead of a drone company catching the trees and whatever. Or they might even pivot to say, oh, now we just, you know, forget that. We're going to take these drones. These drones are pretty cool. We're going to use that to pick up apples, right? Right? This is how people pivot, right? They look at what they built. They look at, you know, what's profitable and stuff like that. And then they kind of go off from there. Very, very rarely do people consider the problem from scratch. Do people consider, oh, should we be cutting down trees at all? Like, why are we even cutting down so many trees? Like, or you know, what axe are we using? Or again, the sawdust. Like, they don't go back to the very root of the problem and try to solve that, right? Because once you begin executing an idea, you think you've solved it already, right? Like, you think the problem is done with, and now it's just thinking about like how to best, you know, solve that problem. Right. All that to say that the very first job of a good ideas person is to recognize the full scope of the problem. Right. And sometimes it takes a lot of time. And yeah, maybe you don't have that time. And so there are things you do, like asking a bunch of people or seeing what's feasible within a certain timeline. Like, what problem can we solve within this scope? Right. Like what part of the problem can we solve? Like, we understand this, it's probably more here. There's many times where I've built a simulation where I was like, it would be so much better if they solve this outside the simulation, right? If they gave their workers more time, or this, that, and the other, right? But that's not a problem we can solve. But what we can do is recognize that because people are, you know, overworked, or because people are very busy, or because people are new to the job or whatever, we can't solve those problems, but we can consider that in our current solution. And so we make the simulation shorter, or we make the simulation more engaging, or whatever, right? And so the point here is that there's always a area or a consideration for having a better understanding of the problem. So that's like the first step, where a lot of tech companies, a lot of other companies probably, but I'm more comfortable with recognizing the problem with tech companies. But yeah, that's where a lot of them, you know, stumble. And then beyond that, of course, is getting enough feedback. A lot of times, these companies don't ask for end user feedback. They have stakeholders, right? They have shareholders. They have managers. They have all these other people in the mix that are not the end users. And when it does come to the end users, the only they just do a little survey. Right? How you feel about this? You know, would you buy this if? Like, those are terrible ways to understand the problem, right? Like, if the end user, like the person who actually has the problem, you're not sitting down with them and understanding portions of their life and how they come to this problem and where they're coming across the problem and the impact the problem is having in their life. If you're not sitting down and doing this in-depth research, this qualitative and quantitative research around the specifics of the problem, then no amount of surveys and what's the other ones they do? The focus groups, right? None of that is actually going to solve the problem meaningfully. And that's another reason why technology today, I think, is so substandard, in my opinion, right? Not even in my opinion, in facts. Like, if you just look at the data of, like, the problems it's solving and the level of innovation. So, like, I just looked at the time. I'm spending way too much. This was meant to be a short thing. That's another thing, too. Like, I like talking. Like I said, you know, I used to do, even back then, my average episode was like 20 to 30 minutes. And now my average episode is probably like an hour. But a big reason for that is because I'm doing it more inconsistently, like, maybe like once a week or once every 2 weeks or something like that. So I feel like I have to expound more. Versus if I did this every day, I'd probably be able to do short episodes. But every day is hard because I work a lot more now. I have a lot more things on my plate now. So, yeah. But I do like these cadence as well, just kind of going out whenever I can. Sometimes that might mean, you know, a whole lot of episodes. Sometimes it means very few. But either way, it's going to be some episodes. But anyways, yeah, I've learned a lot about ideas and the value of ideas and my own quote unquote value, right? I don't really like to use that word in terms of people, but I've learned a lot about what I bring to the table as an ideas person, as a person that can, you know, come up with ideas and put them out there and you know, all that stuff. So I'm trying to learn how to appreciate myself more in that regard, and to, you know, recognize the what I bring to the world and the importance of what I do and how I can, you know, do it better. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey, and I definitely want to reflect more. I want to listen back to some more episodes and maybe shout out to Zach, do what he does and like read, or in my case, I guess, listen to all my old journals and kind of highlight things and pull out things and make notes and stuff like that. Honestly, that sounds like a lot of work. I probably won't do it, but I'm going to try. I try to dedicate a day to doing that. Cause I do think that there's some really cool stuff, really cool insights you can get from that practice. But, yeah, and there was something else I went to talk about, I think, but it's not coming to mind anymore. But yeah, today I just want to take some time for myself. When I get back to the house, I'm just gonna game, just gonna play some games for the rest of the day, and you know, get back to it. Tomorrow, even though tomorrow is a holiday, but still a lot of things I want to do, I need to do, even beyond work. So I'm gonna use that day for getting ahead on some other things. I hope that for those listening that have listened for years, I hope that this has been interesting in a good way, and to me, interesting is always a good thing. You know, some intrigue there, some lessons there that you can pull, even if it's from you know, not great sources, something that's interesting is something that you can learn from in some shape or form. And I hope that this podcast, this audio journal, has been interesting. And I hope it continues to be so. And if you ever do start your own audio journal, or if you already have one, please let me know. I would love to check it out. I guess I'll end it there. Probably have a lot of other thoughts in the back of my mind, but I don't want to broach that because then this podcast might be a 2-hour episode. thanks for listening all this time. Or if you just started, thanks nonetheless. Really appreciate it. And I hope it has helped you to think more and to reflect more and do your own on your own journey. So as always, don't be afraid to be radical. Keep being awesome. Don't be afraid to be revolutionary, all that good stuff. Embrace love, embrace change, keep growing, believe in yourself, all the affirmations. I do think affirmations are important. It sounds silly a lot of times, at least it does to me, but it can be very helpful, especially if you back it up with like self-reflection and rationale and, you know, kind of work through whatever you may be dealing with that is blocking your affirmations from feeling realistic or practical. So, all right, let me shut up. Thanks and have a great day. See ya, bye-bye.